Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Listen, it's the Burt Show.
All right, Abby, so the love lost and found situation, was this you or your friend, or how does this go down?
God, I wish it was me, but it's not. And my friend thinks she may have found the love of her life on a plane, but it is up to us to decide whether or not she is actually going to follow through with finding this love lost. So this all happened last week when she was traveling for, I think, a wedding out in California. And of course, you get on the plane, you're kind of expecting like you're going to be stuck next to some like old couple, and you're going to be like fighting for the armrest, and it's not going to be a good time. Well, funnily enough, her flight had gotten delayed before she got on, and she had sat at this bar, enjoyed herself a little beverage, and noticed that there was a very handsome, very tall, very, very athletic looking man at the bar. And she's like, you know what? I really wish that guy was on my plane. I wish that that type of guy would be somewhere in my vicinity, because there's nothing better than having an airport crush, because truly, like, the spiciest place on earth is looking at someone who's a solid six at the airport, because for some reason, everybody gets hotter when you are at the airport. So she sees this guy, she enjoys her beverage, and then she goes to her gate. She notices, oh my God, homeboy is at my gate too. Like, oh my God, I wonder like if he's going to be like in the row near me. I wonder what's going to happen. So she gets on the plane. This guy sits right next to her. She sits next to the cute guy. She gets, I guess, like whatever happened in the universe, whenever she booked her flight and he booked his flight, they ended up sitting next to each other and just had a really great time, you know, chatting and talking about what each other does and their careers and when they went to college. And I guess he is from California or wherever. And so he's going to go visit family for the week for the holiday. And she's like, cool, I'm going to go for a wedding, blah, 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 blah. So they end up getting off the plane. He said, it was so lovely meeting you. By the way, my name is, we'll call him Dawson. My name's Dawson. And she's like, oh, my name's blah, blah, blah. And they just part their separate ways. They never exchange contact information, despite the fact that they had like a 3-hour flight. So she gets in the car and she's like, oh my God, I think I just met the love of my life. And yet I don't know where I'm going to find him. So she sends out a message to the group chat. And she's like, okay, here's what I know about him. He's from blah, 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 California. And he went to blah, blah, blah university. And he works for a blah, blah, blah tech company or whatever. Can we find this man? And then ding. Of course, women are like the FBI. Mm-hmm. We found him immediately. So she's looking at her phone and she's like, you know, I don't know how this is going to come off, because we didn't exchange contact information. I just know his first name and like what he does for a living and where he's from. Do I follow him on Instagram? Or is that going to come off across like I'm some kind of stalker?
Because right, so let's ask Mo here. If you're in this situation, you see that she follows you.
It's tough, right? Because it would literally all come down to my level of interest. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I'm interested, then I wouldn't see it as stalking at all. I'd be excited. I'd be happy that this is happening. But if I'm not interested, I'd see it as weird.
So weird. So that's the situation she's finding herself in, where it's like, okay, it would be so great if we could have just exchanged contact information and like had we had known that there was that kind of mutual interest. But right now she's just playing off of vibes. She's like, I feel like the vibe was there. He gave me his name. We talked for, you know, a couple of hours. I feel like you're not going to talk to somebody for that long if you're not interested. But at the same time, like maybe he's just a nice dude.
I agree. But with that being said, right, the weirdest, let's say the worst happens. Right. And she reaches out and he thinks it's weird. And then life carries on and nothing comes. You don't lose anything.
You're never going to see this dude again.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
She wants to see this dude again.
That's why she should shoot.
Yeah. So everybody, of course, like we believe in love. So we're like, you have to follow him. We have to follow him. But I mean, when you're in that position, it just puts you in such a vulnerable place to be like, OK, now I'm kind of switching the dynamic of like not that she's in the driver's seat, but now it's kind of like she's virtually pursuing him. Yeah. And it's going to put her heart on the line of like, if he doesn't follow me back, then that means I've painted this entire story in my head that this guy and I were perfect for each other. And really, he just got a little drunk off Fireball on her flight to California.
This is so typical right here. Mo really and I are like, shoot your shot, big deal. Yeah. You're never going to see the guy again. And she's like, but my instincts would be so far off because the chemistry and the connection was there, and I'll never find a man like him again.
How will I ever recover?
I know, there's like 1,000 other finance bros who look exactly like him, but I was like, listen, when there's love in front of you, I think you need to take the chance. So I think I'm going to force her to make a decision today, so I will update you as to whether or not he ends up following her back.
Take the chance.
This is a no-brainer, right? She's got literally nothing to lose, except, again, because women think in a way more sophisticated way than guys do, that it's such more of a message for her about herself than it really is in real life.
So on Instagram, if you send if you do the follow and he doesn't follow back, no, that's Facebook with the friend request, and he would have to accept. But with this, is he private? Like, is he going to have to accept her request?
He's private, so he's going to have to accept the request. Uh-huh. So you're going to know if he sees it or not.
So if he does, like, how long? So what is the time period? Because at a certain point, you need to resend said request if he hasn't accepted, correct?
I would not. I would send one, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would just leave it there for...
Yeah,
absolutely.
Same.
Oh, no, I can't.
See, the more you do that, now it's getting creepy.
No! Let me follow you.
And she's sure he's single.
I told her, this was my vibe. I'm like, listen, a man, unless he's cheating on somebody, a man is not going to talk to you for 2 hours on a flight unless he is romantically interested in you and single. So I'm like, if he is in a relationship, he's looking to get out of it. That's my opinion. So we don't know because he's private. She's going to have to follow him to find out. But I think the vibes are there. I was like, I believe in love. I'm putting this out there for you. So we'll know this week.
Go for it.
So while we're here talking about dating, let me run this one by you here, right? Mo, it's a first date. And you've been talking to somebody online for a while, what have you, don't know what they really look like, or maybe you do, right? And they show up for the first date, and she doesn't have any makeup on at all. You have any opinion about it?
I wouldn't care.
Wouldn't care.
I probably wouldn't even think twice about it.
Abby, would you be capable of going on a first date with no makeup at all?
Absolutely not. I know where my strengths lie, and it's not in the face. I'm about $15,000 away of plastic surgery from getting there.
Yeah, save that.
Got a couple more procedures lined up.
All right, so according to this online, it says a lot of Gen Zers are starting to do this now, where you show up for our first date without doing your hair and without doing makeup, and you're like, this is the real me. Take it or leave it on a very first date.
I guess that's just not how I see relationships or just like existing period. Like I wouldn't go into any other situation and be like, this is me, take it or leave it. Uh-huh. I feel like in every area of your life, you should at least be putting in some effort. I mean, regardless of if it's just like getting up in the morning, like if I just walked out of the house naked, that's a problem. You know what I mean? You got to put some effort into your life. And so I feel like when it comes to dating, you got to put a little effort in, you know, at the very least, try and make yourself presentable. It doesn't have to be makeup, but brush your hair.
Some are taking it one step further also. What's that?
What she said about putting yourself together. Like, the makeup thing is not an issue, but you shouldn't come to the date looking like you don't care at all.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the effort, for sure.
Right. It's the effort. Now, some are doing this. Is like, you get more makeup with each and every date. So you show up on the first one and you've got no makeup, right? Now we've graduated to the second date. So you're putting, I don't even know what you guys put on your face. Whatever it is, it's the most basic of
lip gloss and mascara.
Okay. And then on a third date, you put more on and you are working your way up to trying to impress a guy.
To a full beat.
But then it's the wedding day. And then you gotta get the full beat for the wedding day.
It also says that in a lot of cases now, for Gen Zers specifically, like, it's not your traditional first date anymore, where we go out, you're doing a lot of more active things, like maybe you're going on a hike or something where you don't really need makeup, so you're just showing up without it.
Well, that makes sense. Like, if you're going on a coffee date or if you're just going out for a walk, like, I think that's fine. Like, dress for the appropriate occasion. But I think as long as they're is effort there, I don't see really like what the argument is there. Like, some people don't like to wear makeup, and that's totally your prerogative. But there are other things you can do to make yourself look like you tried for a date.
Would you have been capable of doing that?
On dates? Absolutely not. But it's how I got my first morning show gig. Because I showed up and I was wearing t-shirt. Like, I actually remember, I was wearing a Chevy t-shirt, jeans, hair pulled back like it is now, and no makeup because, you know, it's an ungodly morning hour. And it was one of the things the host appreciated, was that I came in as I was and as I am. And it wasn't a focus on appearance. It was a focus on performance.
Now, if you take that out of the work environment, though, and you take it into the dating world, would you show up on a date with zero makeup on at all?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I can't imagine a world where that happens.
I do think it's funny, the whole, like, you're earning your makeup concept. Like, okay, like, the next date I'm going to wear foundation. Because I kind of subconsciously do that on dates where it's like, the more longer I date you, the more feminine my outfits will get. Like, date one, I'm always in, like, jeans and a cute bodysuit. But then, like, if you graduate to date three, like, I'll wear a cute little dress or something. Feel like you got to kind of earn that, too.
Okay, so it's sort of saying the same thing.
So, yeah, but I'm wearing makeup.
But you're wearing makeup.
Yeah.
All
right.
This is The Bert Show.
I have a list of the best and worst celebrities to work for. I'm going to go through this list, tell you the celebrity, and you're going to have to tell me if you think they were good to work for or they were bad to work for. Now, the list came from BuzzFeed, but it got sparked from a Reddit thread. So a Redditor, see me at the zoo, asked the community, as a bodyguard, who was your best and or worst person that you had to protect and why? So we're thinking bodyguard, which ran into one of Diddy's old bodyguards.
Okay, now I got a little insight here because were you on the show when we did the bit where in the world is Susie?
Nope.
So she was a traveled the world by herself, right? And she ended up getting on this reality TV show where she was Diddy's assistant. And she used to tell me how difficult it really was. And he comes off as work ethic. She's like, nah, man, that wasn't true. She said it was not an enjoyable experience. Any time of day, it could be 2:30, 3 in the morning. As soon as Diddy calls, you got to be there and you got to start working. So she said it was not a pleasant experience.
Yeah, so the person that I know that used to be Diddy's bodyguard back in the day, this was many, many, many moons ago, he was such a nightmare that this guy got out of the bodyguard business and decided never to be a bodyguard for anybody ever again. Yeah. That he never saw anything that Diddy was accused of as far as when it came to women, but trying to be his bodyguard, he goes, he was an absolute nightmare. He was a despicable person the way he treated people. You would go into a club and you knew that you were fighting for your life because he loved to stir up S so much that he was nasty just to be nasty.
Oh my God.
It seems like every bodyguard, well, at least two in particular that are speaking out about Diddy and have been speaking out about Diddy for years now have had nothing but mean things to say and actually hate him. Like, that's the thing about it. It's like, they don't just seem to dislike him. They seem to pretty much hate him.
And that's like the vibe. And like, this is like, this is a nice dude from what I know. And when he was telling me this, you could see the disdain in his face for that man. Wow. That he was like, he is just not a good person.
Professional Diddy and private Diddy are two, were at least in my experience, totally different. I mean, we've had him in here. This was years and years and years ago. We've had him in before. He invited us to go on stage with him, hang out with him. It was all super fun. And there was even a dude on the show at the time that was going to like Martha's Vineyard or the Hamptons. And Diddy wasn't going to be there. And he's like, oh, just take my house for the weekend. And he did.
They say the dude is incredibly charming.
All right, so your celebrities from this list from BuzzFeed, again, these are bodyguards who are reporting back as to what these people were like. All right, do you think best or worst, Gwen Stefani?
Ooh, I don't know much about her, but I'll go best.
I feel kind of indifferent. Like, she could either be like meh or like solid. So I'm going to go with good. I want to believe the good with Gwen Stefani.
I feel like old school, like no doubt Gwen Stefani, not so great, but older Gwen Stefani, great. I'll go with great though.
The one celeb that breaks all my female friends' hearts when I have to tell what her true demeanor is. Seriously, I experienced it on three different occasions. I would rather roll around in a bed of broken syringes used by crack, you know what, than deal with her ever again.
No. Are you kidding?
Oh, really?
Does it give a reason why? Nope, it doesn't. It just says that. And then it said, on the flip side, Gavin Rossdale is the chillest, most humble, laid-back guy ever.
Wow.
She's just a girl.
She's just... All right, Victoria and David Beckham, best or worst when it comes to being their bodyguard?
So this is bodyguard for both of them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're doing it for the couple, for the Beckhams.
It's funny because I feel like if I was answering for them individually, I'd have different answers.
Uh-huh.
But them together, I'll say good.
I feel like it's going to be one of those surprising answers, so I'm going to go with good.
I'm going to go with great.
They were the most polite, down-to-earth, good, caring people. I can never talk smack about Posh Spice ever again or make fun of David because of how nice they were.
Oh, I love that.
You have to watch their Netflix special, that documentary that came out really a couple of years ago, and it really details exactly what they're all about. They're solid folks.
All right, so John Cena, you were his bodyguard. Was he the best or the worst to work for?
Every time I hear something about John Cena, it seems to be really good. So I'm going to go good.
He seems like a good guy. I'm going to go good.
Not convinced.
I think it's an act. I don't think he's a good guy.
No. When I was younger, I worked security and had to escort John Cena somewhere. I was told not to let any fans near him. A fan saw him and asked for an autograph, which caused more fans to see him. He said it was fine to let them near him and signed an autograph for every single fan.
Aww.
He apologized for making me wait and gave me a Snickers when we got to his dressing room. When people say he's a nice guy, they are not exaggerating.
All right, that's good to hear.
Nope. Mm-hmm.
All right, what about Snoop Dogg? Best or worst when it comes to being his bodyguard?
He don't even know.
Snoop seems like he'd be chill for obvious reasons.
If you say bad, I'm going to be so incredibly disappointed.
He's stoned all the time. How could you be in a bad mood when you're, you know?
Especially older Snoop. I'm going good.
That's what I was going to say.
Younger Snoop, maybe I could see the issues because he had a lot of street stuff going on.
Yep.
But older Snoop, I'd say good.
Good. It's got to be good.
It literally starts with, he was totally chill.
Okay. Oh, I love that.
He asked that I put the Steelers game on for him and gave me a wad of cash to pay for a bunch of PlayStation 2s to bring up to his room since he and his entourage were going to have a major Madden tournament in the evening. He also instructed me to only allow children near him and no adults since he only signs autographs for little kids. He was super respectful individual, considering what he's known for in his career, but he was like, he was the best.
No one can be that high and mean.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Two things cannot be true.
Well, what are you doing it for?
All right, two more quick ones. Adam Lambert, if you remember him from American Idol.
We've had too many good ones. I got to feel like there's a bad one in there, so no.
Yeah, I don't really know him, but I'll go bad.
I'm going to go bad also.
I never met or worked for someone so heartless and rude. I was asked to take care of his private security one night as a favor for his tour manager. He literally came up to me, put his arm on my shoulder and said, unless you see 1,000 people bother me, stay the F away as possible. I couldn't believe that someone I was asked to protect said that. I did my best to be professional and held every ounce of strength not to kill the guy myself. He purposely made my night a living hell.
Wow.
Lastly, Eminem. Best or worst to be a bodyguard for?
That could really go.
And this is, I'll give you, I actually have a timeline.
Okay.
It says, I was a bodyguard for Eminem from spring 2000, right before the Marshall Mathers LP was released, up until about fall of 2004, right around when Encore was released.
So something happens, and I've said this before on the show, it's been my experience that when you have celebs that are on their way up, that's their jerk face phase. But once they make it, that's when they're like authentic and really, really cool. So if this is before he made it, I'd say bad attitude.
I think the era you mentioned was an era when he was pretty angry and was going through some things. So I'm going to say bad.
I'm going to go bad. You guys are all wrong.
Really?
This person, former bodyguard, said, I can write a book about it. You never would have guessed Eminem was a celebrity. He was exceedingly humble, somewhat awkward, and rarely a D word to people. He treated all of his staff, ranging from sound engineers to those who prepared food at the studio, very kindly and well. He never used his celebrity status to bully or show contempt towards others and actually shied away from it.
That's
nice to hear.
Yeah. I love that.
He's probably cool. Like, please don't tell people those stories. I need street cred.
It's The Burt Show.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Time to get buzzed on the hot goss from Hollywood with Abby. It's the Burt Show's entertainment buzz.
Drake has officially found somebody else to beef with. And it's not just somebody else. It is a vague group of people. Because now in his newest track that came out over the weekend, he is calling out all of his quote unquote friends that turned on him or deserted him during his very public beef with Kendrick Lamar. This is, I feel like, been one of the biggest stories of the last year, year and a half, especially with Kendrick performing at the Super Bowl halftime show and performing Not Like Us, which is that iconic diss track against Drake where he calls him a pedophile. Not good things, obviously. And because I feel like so many people have turned against Drake, it makes you wonder how his inner circle has reacted to it. And in his new song, What Did I Miss? He basically says, if you are hanging out with people that don't mess with me, or if you have turned your back on me, like, I'm out.
The one thing I do like about that is that if anybody, I think he's very good about connecting with an audience and sharing things that are relatable. And everybody's been betrayed by a friend before, mm-hmm. right? Most people. And I think the first question you ask yourself really is, what did I miss?
I think that's exactly what he's doing. Betrayal is a universal language. Like you said, everybody has been betrayed, and Drake has a way of connecting to where his bars will be on Instagram. There'll be captions and people will be posting it or something. And I think that's what he was going for. But at the same time, I think it really has affected him. I mean, you can tell in the music that he's released since this has all happened that it's mentally, I think there's a hurdle that he is yet to get over, and he's struggling through it, and he's trying to get through it the best he can, but it doesn't look great.
Do you think people are going to see this as him sort of returning to like the vulnerable side of Drake and opening up and talking about what he's been through? Or do you think people are just going to see this as like, can you not let this go? Like, we've been talking about this for so long.
You know, I think people are going to do one or the other either way, right? So I think Drake is doing what he should do, actually. I think he should lean into the vulnerable Drake, because that's the most of his fan base. That's what they love him for. So while so many people are going to say, bro, let it go, get over it, your core fan base is going to stick with you because of why they have stuck with you. So I think he's doing what he should be doing, but at some point you do got to let it go.
You know, and I know a lot of times when we're talking about celebrities or we're talking about the entertainment buzz, they're just names and you kind of forget that they're real people. But think about this whole thing and how jarring and devastating it really has been in his life. I mean, humiliated publicly. He clearly got crushed in this. Business-wise, I mean, he's really going to take a hit. But on a personal level also, it's all happening in the public. So every single day you're seeing the comments and you're hearing the comments. And then on the personal level also is, who can I trust? Like, I've had so many people in my circle that I thought were on my side that ended up on a stage with Kendrick Lamar. Like, you start to question your own, like, eyes and your own gut. Like, I can't trust myself to trust other people anymore.
It has to be humbling. And because the dude been on top of his game for years now, since he started. And I do get that piece of it that, you know, like we said, everybody's been through that, to where you turn to your left and your right and the people you thought had your back the most seem to be your ops, as they put it. But I think people are struggling to give him empathy because of the humility that he did not show when he was on top and when he had his turn. And it's kind of like the chickens coming home to roost.
Okay.
That's kind of how I feel, where it's, you never know how that kind of situation is going to like bring out the worst in you. And so of course it may look like betrayal if his friends are hanging out with people that don't like him, his ops or whatever. But if you have turned into the kind of person that like is difficult to be around, or you're not showing humility under the like fire that Kendrick brought with all of his diss tracks, I think it makes a lot of sense that, yeah, your friends are probably going to distance themselves from you, and also, you know, maybe hang out with people that don't mess with you either.
If it happens just one time to you, you start to question yourself. Mm-hmm. But he's got like a dozen people that he thought were like his close friends that all ended up like betraying him.
Yeah, it's a pattern that will force you to see the common denominator in it all.
Yeah.
We need someone to like look at him and just level with him, be like, dude, like really bring him into reality. So I think
really tell him what he missed.
Since he asked,
we'll tell you. Here, Bird Show.
Noticed you guys using a word on the show the last couple of months. It's been driving me crazy. And every time you use it, I say to myself, I got to look that up to see that if it's even a word. You know which one I'm talking about?
No.
You won't have a clue.
Only recently have Americans started using the word funnily.
Funnily?
It used to be funny enough. And now it's funnily enough.
Funnily enough.
It's a real word.
Yeah.
I didn't know that until just recently.
I didn't know it until I heard Kristen use it.
I heard, Kristen said it today, but I don't think we've used it that much.
It's pretty much, because every time you do, I'm like, ew. It's been around since the 1700s.
Yeah. I used to feel that way when you said goodly. You used to use goodly a lot.
Goodly?
Yeah.
That's legit also.
I know it is.
It just doesn't sound right.
Exactly.
All right, so let's check back here with why do we want to talk to you on Monday? Because this could have gone sideways very, very quickly.
Yeah, so Sarah has an identical twin, and her identical twin sister got set up on a date by a coworker, but she really didn't want to go. She had found him on Instagram, and she's like, this guy's busted. He's not my type. So she couldn't bow out because she didn't want to bow out because, you know, it's kind of messed up because you don't find him attractive, blah, blah, blah. So she was like, this is going to make things awkward at work with the coworkers. So instead of just canceling, she begged her identical twin sister, Sarah, to go in her place just to be nice. So Sarah agreed, mainly because she's like, well, this could be interesting. And also, like, maybe I can see if I can pull it off. So Sarah's plan was to keep it service level, don't agree to go on a second date, and then just make it through dinner. So now we have to check in with Sarah to see how the date went and to see if she got busted.
Hey, Sarah.
Hi. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. All right. How did it go? Were you nervous approaching the date? Was it easy? Did this guy, like, did he buy it hook, line, and sinker?
Yeah, I was pretty nervous, but I pulled it off. He had no idea I wasn't my sister's twin, and it went great. I mean, he was funny, charming, and we actually clicked. Like, we ended up staying out way longer than planned. I remember you guys told me to, like, keep the date shorter, but then we had, like, drinks, we had dessert, we even walked around downtown, and I don't know, I was supposed to keep it surface level, but it felt like a real date, and he texted me the next morning and was like, I had a great time, can we do this again soon? And the only problem is he still thinks that I'm my sister. And so, like, now I'm really torn. I don't know if I should come clean. Or just, like...
You did not hold it down for your sister at all.
Seriously.
Well, obviously, Sarah, you told your... I'm sure the first person you contacted after you got home was your sister to let her know how the ruse went. And I'm sure your sister's like, there's no way you can date this guy. Like, that's just not even a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I called her and I was like, oh, yeah, it was fine, whatever. But I didn't tell her, like, you know, I like this guy.
Oh, no.
You know, I feel bad. I was supposed to take one for the team and I didn't expect to catch feelings. But
all right, so you got a bunch of problems ahead of you here. So you got to go to the sister. And at some point or another, you got to tell dude, right?
Yeah.
No. Well, if you keep seeing him, you do. You can't keep seeing him.
Well, yeah.
It don't sound like she's gonna stop.
Kristen, look at me. It's brutal out here. She pretended to be a completely different person on the date. No, just her name. The only thing that's different is her name. She was herself. Oh. They clicked. I believe in love.
I don't think for a guy this is as big as an offense as you think it is. If he thinks she's really hot. And they had a great time, and he thought they had a chemistry. There is a window where he would think that was funny, but not care.
I know how we can get out of this, and we got to do it quickly because otherwise something is happening today at the office. Like, he's going to see your sister at the water cooler and be like, hey, baby, and she's going to be like, what? So I think the way that we get out of this is we do a very well-placed lie. Maybe we text the guy and say, hey, I want to be honest, finally, and say something along the lines of, my sister got your information before the date and she recognized that you were more of my type than hers. She knows that a guy like you is my type. So she let me go on the date instead of her, not knowing it was going to go this well because I really like you. Would love to see you again. And by the way, my name's Sarah.
That wouldn't bother you.
It all depends. It all depends, right? If I think she's super hot and she comes clean and we had a chemistry, I'd laugh it off.
You would not.
I absolutely would laugh it off. It ain't that serious.
No, it would bother me.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
And here's the deal.
First date wouldn't bother me at all. Now, if you wait any longer, then we got a problem. But right now, it's funny.
All right, so if you're going to go with the lie, because thankfully this dude and your sister don't work together. She just got set up by the coworker. So if you're going to do this, I think a well-placed lie here to be like, my sister wasn't able to make it, but she didn't want to bail on her coworker because she was afraid of how it would, like, come off at work. So she asked if I would step in, and I did, like, and I would take take the L like that and then let him decide if he still wants to see you again.
That's your best chance for sure.
But I would come up with some kind of lie. Not that your sister found him on Insta and thought he was butt. I'm not going to tell him that. But tell him something along the lines like, my sister wasn't going to be able to make it, but she didn't want to upset her coworker because she was afraid about work dynamics. Like one of those types of things or whatever. And be like, so I stepped in for her, but I actually really like you. This is so weird.
It is very weird.
I wouldn't have a problem.
It could be the beginning of something special, though. Because he could have a mindset like Bert and see the humor in it. And if he's still attracted to the sister, I could see him being like, you know what? This is kind of wild, but I had a great date. Let's see where it goes. And then that could be the end of it. Or he could look at it like me and you probably never hear from him.
You go on so many bad dates as a single person that if this is the one thing in the way of a really great date and connection, I'm into it. I'm going for it. This is the one red flag. There are people cheating on each other out here. Like, this is the one thing.
All right. So does she go to the sister first and then go to dude?
You got to go to the sister first.
You have to.
You got
to
go to the sister first. Yeah. I think here's your thing. All right, and I'd love to check in with you tomorrow because I want to give you a homework assignment. You got to go to your sister. If you get the okay from her, then you got to go to him. So you got two steps today. And then if she says no, then step two is off anyway, right?
I would say so.
Yeah. So you go to your sister first, see what she says. And if she says it's cool, then you go to the dude and then you call us back tomorrow and you tell us how it went.
Sounds good. I'm terrified, but it sounds like a plan.
You should be. This is bad, Sarah.
You're pretty deep in it.
I don't think it's that awful. It's not going to be that awful. Everybody's going to have one good laugh about it.
This is going to be a great story at their wedding.
This is going to be hilarious.
The Burt Show.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
All right, if you've been around here a while, you know family meetings here generally aren't great. And if you're checking us out this morning because you need a little escape and some fun, we can provide that for you here over the next couple of minutes during this family meeting. Cass, you want to take this one over?
Yeah, but if you are looking to cry this morning, I got you covered.
Yeah.
I'm going to try my best to get through this without doing my weird high-pitched cry speak that I normally do. And if you're a P1, you know what I'm talking about. My mother had been battling breast cancer for the past 4 years. And on Father's Day, she passed away. That's the short of it. Bert's been so gracious to allow me to work from Louisiana so I could be with her in her final weeks and work remotely and give me time off to deal with the grief. It's been a long journey. I remember when she first told us that she had breast cancer, we were going to visit over July 4th, and I was so excited because I was going to surprise my parents with the news that I was pregnant with our second child, our son. And I had walked in with my daughter wearing a big sister t-shirt. She was like two at the time, or one and change. And, you know, they were so excited. And we were waiting to find out the gender. And we found it out while we were there. And we told them. And it was this big thing. And on the very last day, she sat us down and told us that they had found breast cancer. And I just remember thinking, you know, that was probably the whole weekend she was gearing herself up to telling us. And then I busted in with the I'm pregnant news and her having to sit on that for the entire weekend, knowing she was about to share this news. At the time, it was only stage two. We had to fight with insurance who didn't want to cover any treatment to the point where she had her chemo port installed, was sitting in the chair with the chemo tube in, and they had to undo it because insurance decided to deny her claims. And I'm just going to give you the raw of everything going through this. So I think when we talk about people having cancer, a lot of people don't really understand what that means. Like, you get it, but you don't really understand what the patients and the families are going through. And it's a lot. And she fought it. The scan showed she was clear. And then a few months later, she went in for something else to get a scan. And the very bottom of the scan for a totally different issue had caught some more growth, some more tumor growth, which I was frustrated that there aren't more frequent scans after you're supposedly clear from cancer. Hers was supposed to be a year out. So by that time, it had metastasized all over her body, and she was at stage 4. And stage 4 is really bad. Just to sum it up, And she fought. She went to MD Anderson in Houston. She decided to take this thing on. And, you know, it gave us 4 years with her. And I'm so grateful for those 4 years. But the last one has been the hardest. And it is very weird, too, to have this living grief hanging over your head, because for 4 years we knew that it was going to take her life, except we didn't know when, because there are huge advancements in breast cancer. I mean, there are people who live for decades after, you know, undergoing treatment or even with it. And, you know, and MD Anderson was very upfront. They're like, we cannot cure your cancer, but we can help you live with it. And that's what they did. And I'm internally grateful to their staff and everyone in that building. I remember walking around. She had to have a radiation on her brain because tumors were forming there and she was cold. And I'm running around the halls trying to find a warm blanket. And there are two men in suits, very clearly not doctors, very clearly administration. Then they saw me looking, and they must have been pretty high up at MD Anderson. They stopped what they were doing, their meeting, to go get my mom a warm blanket. And that's the kind of staff that they have at that hospital. So she fought it, and she fought it well, but it was a very aggressive form of cancer, unfortunately, that she had contracted, I guess, or got. And so we were living with the knowledge that it was going to take her life, but we tried to make every single day count. And finally, it was when we were visiting my sister for her PhD graduation in New Orleans, my mom broke down and told us that she couldn't do it anymore because she was in so much pain. She was on so many meds and they weren't touching the pain. And so we told her, we said, you know, you have to do what you have to do. You have to stop thinking, putting us first, because that's what she always does, puts other people first. We're like, you can let go. It's okay. So that next Monday, she made the decision to enter hospice care. Now, I didn't know anything about hospice care when we started. I think a lot of people maybe think of a hospice home that you move into or being in a hospital. My mom wanted to pass at home. So we signed up, but my parents live in a very rural community in Louisiana, so it's not like the hospice services or what you might get in a big city. And I was not prepared for the level of caretaking that I would have to do. And of course, gladly doing it, but it gave me an insight into what hospice workers have to deal with bathing and changing somebody who can't stand or even move around themselves. And this whole time you're doing it and you're looking, you're like, this is my mother, and she looks nothing like she did before. You know, she's literally wasting away in front of your eyes. She can't eat, although she did down a couple of Coronas and a gin and tonic. We were able to do that. And near the end, she couldn't swallow. So they had special sponges that you dip into water or gin and tonic just to feed her. And you could see her face light up when she got one of the other, you know, a Corona or whatever. But watching her on the bed, and the pain meds weren't working then either. And it was exhausting because it was every 15 minutes she wanted to move. She would sit up. She'd try to get out of bed, which she can't do. She'd move to the wheelchair. She'd move to a seat. And I'm not exaggerating. It was every 15 minutes, 24 hours a day, because she was in so much pain and we couldn't get it. So thankfully, my friend, Dr. Meredith Maxwell, is actually a hospice medical director and was able to give me some advice on how to be an advocate for her and her pain. And we got it figured out. And then she was resting comfortably. I got about, probably by the time I went down, the decline was fast. And this entire time, you know, I think I was living in Delululand a little bit, because I'm like, it's going to be fine. She's a fighter. She's going to hang in there. We're going to be one of those cases that has like 20 years. She'll just be living with it. And the first thing that got me was when she started walking around with oxygen tanks, because she couldn't walk and couldn't breathe because there were so many tumors in her lungs and it was compressing them. And that was the first sign, but I'm like, we still got this. And then once she entered hospice care, it's like she gave herself permission to let go, and it was like that. Mm-hmm. I think I got one lucid day with her before she sort of slipped into a semi-conscious state. She would kind of respond to stimuli from time to time, like the drinks, or if Hazel, my daughter, came in the room, because the whole family, we went down there just to stay with her during the end weeks. And, you know, it's interesting dealing with kids and death, and nothing will mess you up more than having to shop for kids' funeral clothes, mm-hmm. which I was doing on the way down. And why is there not a website for this? This should be easier, honestly. I should not have to buy from like I don't want a $300 Italian wool suit. I just want a pair of black pants and a black shirt. Whatever. We decided to let them see some of it so that they would get used to the idea of death. Obviously, we kept them away from the really hard, gritty parts, but we let them see raw emotion. We let them talk to her. They got to spend a little time with her in the bed and have their final moments with her. And just watching her sleep and move, you know, sort of disappear bit by bit, and watching my mom disappear was hard. And watching the woman I knew, who was so strong, turn into a frail, weak version of herself because of some stupid disease is so hard to do. And finally, she passed away on Father's Day, peacefully. My dad was by her side, and I have some guilt over it because she always said she wanted to pass surrounded by family, you know, but honestly, she was hanging on in there. We thought she was going to pass like a week earlier. We're like, this is it. This is it. Prepare everyone. I think I emailed you guys. I'm like, this is it. And then she's like, sweet. We got another week left. And so my dad, though, was sitting by her side reading a book, as he loves to do, holding her hand. Her dog, Jesse, who has been such a loyal, faithful companion to her, was at her feet. And I like to think as she passed, she saw that. She saw my sister and I being absolute idiots cackling in the kitchen as we were cooking a Father's Day meal. And she saw my husband, Chad, playing a Mario Kart tournament with her grandchildren in the living room. And I like to think that she looked down on the legacy that she left. So even though we weren't surrounded, the bed, you know, we were all there and the house felt full and happy. And right after she passed, my sister's like, I got to get out of the house. And I was like, go for it. And she went outside and it was near sunset. But all of a sudden, this one strip of sky turned bright pink as my sister was outside talking to my mom. And she ran up to get me. But by that time, the pink had disappeared. And I think that was a sign. I'm a kind of a believer in signs. I like to explain things away, but I do think that was part of it. And, you know, as I was outside talking to my sister about it, all of a sudden, a 404 number calls the house phone. Now, if you don't know Atlanta, Atlanta has a 404 area code. My parents live in Louisiana. There's no one from Atlanta who would be calling them besides me, and I don't even have a 404 number. And my sister and I went inside. My sister answered it, and it was just pure static. That's it. And then it hung up. And I think that was for me. And the 404 was an Atlanta reference, so she would know. I would know she's okay. And then we kept seeing these beautiful dragonflies everywhere. And we were trying to keep things light for the kids. So we were in the pool and this dragonfly kept landing on our fingers and our head. And I'm like, it's her. It's Gigi. It's my mom. And so that kind of has become our single symbol. So now when I see a dragonfly, I'm like, hey, Ma, what's up? It feels very surreal. I feel like I disassociated a lot. I forget. I feel weird going on vacation. We went on vacation this past week, but I was like, I got to do something to balance out the feelings and the grief. So we tried to keep it light for the kids because having them in a house where someone's died for like 2 to 3 weeks and having to talk to them. Thank you, Bert. You brought me some tissues. It's tough. So, you know, we had our family vacation, but it felt weird because I keep thinking about her and it's these pockets of grief that pop up out of nowhere. And it's thinking like, oh, I'm going to take Hazel back to school shopping. And then remembering my mom doing that for me and how I would have been so excited to send her a photo of that. So it's not always the big moments, but my nephew Lucas graduating, she loves my sister-in-law and that family as well. And so it's just these moments that I can't share with her. Although my dad keeps checking her phone and texting back from her number. So my heart stops. I'm like, oh, God, Dad, get your own phone. It's hard and it's weird to be like walking in public and see something like Jasmine. She loved growing jasmine, so I'll see it and then it just hits me out of nowhere and I'll start crying and people are like, what is up with this weirdo? And I don't want to be like, my mom died, you fool, give me a break. But it still doesn't feel real. I feel like I'm sort of in a dream or watching my life as a dream unfold and that she's still there. And so it's like, what do you mean she's gone? You know, every couple of days I'm like, that's not real, she's still here, and I have to relive it all over again. It feels unfair. She was only 68. She won't see her 70th birthday. She won't see my 40th birthday, even though literally the week before she died, she made sure my dad picked up my 40th birthday present, which I'm wearing now. Uh-huh. She had custom made for me, so I did get to open it next to her. She wasn't fully conscious, but she did give a sign that she was excited and happy that I had opened it. And she won't get to see my dad's 70th birthday this year, and I feel for him, too, having to celebrate that alone without his wife of 35 years. My mom was a nurse. She spent her life caring for other people. My sister, myself, those who needed it. She was a midwife. She delivered babies. It's been her entire career, and even just before she died, she was working with Medicaid patients. She has always been there caring for other people. So I'd like to ask every woman listening that if you could honor my mom's legacy and make sure you get yourself checked for breast cancer. There are self-tests you can look up online. You can go get screenings. Because she caught it early, we were able to have this extra time. And I know scheduling stuff when you're busy is a pain in the butt, but it's less painful than the pain your family's going to feel if you don't do it. So please, go get yourself checked. And if you're a survivor, please, in those first years, talk to your doctor about more frequent scans. Because I truly believe if we had had more frequent scans, we would have found it earlier and been able to at least get a little more time. And if you're currently undergoing treatment, I want to leave you with something that I sent her because this really summed up her fight beautifully. It's a quote from Dylan Thomas. And it says, "Do not go gentle into that good night, but rage, rage against the dying of the light." I love you, Mom.
The Burt Show.
Your family will make you take a look in the mirror, won't they, Abby?
I think it's time for a little self-reflection, or at least that's what my parents are saying, because when I was home all last week for the 4th of July holiday, my mom brought up something to me that didn't quite sit right with me, and I'm starting to wonder if maybe she's right. So I've decided to bring it to you. So over the last couple of weeks, I feel like I've had these scenarios that I've come in where I've talked a little bit about some of my customer service frustrations, if you will. Mm-hmm. One of the ones most recently was me at the AT&T store freaking out because I've been there for hours and I still don't have a new phone despite the fact that I've ordered one. And then they sent it to the wrong place and then I got it and then I had to send it back because they'd already reported it stolen. Anyway, I now feel like I need to be a little bit more self-reflective because my parents are bringing this up to me because they're a little bit worried that I'm becoming the worst thing a white woman can be, and that is a Karen.
Oh, no.
They're starting to notice this in me, so.
Wait, can you be in your 20s and be a Karen?
Oh, okay. Sure. Hell yeah. For sure.
I don't know that I fully have evolved into a Karen. I feel like I'm in her, like, predisposed form. Like, okay. I'm like in a little egg.
Oh, and if it
hatches, I'm an embryo, and if it hatches, then I'm gonna like sprout that Kate Gosling mullet.
You're an embryo.
Cut.
Oh, so bless.
I thought it'd be fun to bring a couple of scenarios that my mom has brought up to me that I have complained to her about over the phone with a segment I would like to call Karen Court. I'm going to bring four scenarios where my mom believes I've been a Karen or have had borderline Karen tendencies, and you have to convict me as to whether or not I was actually being a Karen in this scenario. I'm going to start out strong with the situation I had with an Etsy dealer. Now, if you've never been on Etsy, Etsy is like the place where women in their 20s go to get anything they need for like a bachelorette party or a wedding or a birthday. They have like these really great vendors that will make you these custom gifts. And so if you heard a couple of weeks ago, I was planning my brother's proposal. And so I thought, oh, it'd be so great to get his now fiance a little keepsake or something to have at the proposal for like good photos. And I decided to get her like a custom made ring box. So it was going to be a little velvet box in her favorite color, a nice light blush pink. And then I was going to get the name Murphy. That'll be her new last name, embroidered on the front.
So cute.
So cute. I spent a stupid amount of money on it, but I was like, you know what? It'll be a part of my little wedding gift to them and it'll be great. So I go on Etsy. I spend a dumb amount of money on it. And then it was the first thing of the proposal that came in on time. And I was so excited to open it. I had a little Etsy package and I got my scissors and I cut it open. I was like, can't wait to see it. Cause you know how you'll see photos of things they've already created and you're envisioning what it's going to look like when it has like your name on it and the colors you picked and the shape that you wanted. And I open it and it looked like doo-doo. It looked so bad. It literally looked like Jimmy made it, your 4-year-old son.
No.
It was like a ring box with just a stupid sticker on it. And I'm like, I paid $60 for this. This is insane. So me in a blind rage got on Etsy.com and immediately started going off in the reviews. And I was like, I am so disappointed. My brother's proposal is this weekend and we ordered this thinking it was going to look presentable and it looks like It looks bad. I don't think I was that scathing, but I left a pretty disappointing review because I wanted to be honest about my experience because it was clearly made for something important, for a wedding or a proposal, and they screwed it up.
Okay, but before you sent the review, did you try, like, first things first, you email the person that made it, and you're like, hey, what happened here? Because this doesn't look like anything that's on your website.
No.
that's evidence. Okay. So are we doing a ruling? Are we going around?
Was I a Karen or not a Karen?
Not a Karen.
Not a Karen.
No, she doesn't know. She sent you that for a very special occasion. You paid $60 for it.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares if you call? That might just be her work. I mean, when she sends out that kind of product, then you open yourself up to true reviews. So bad business. She got a bad review. That's not Karen.
So a little similar, right? Mm-hmm. Had a box. When you opened it, there was some moss in it where my ring was going to sit. My husband's ring was going to sit with our initials on it or whatever for photos.
Uh-huh.
And I got it and it wasn't up to my standards. Like everything was a little askew, but I just emailed the owner of the shop and said, hey, XYZ. And they sent me a new one very promptly. So, I feel like that Karen embryo is starting to hatch.
Okay.
Damn, I got to be the deciding factor.
Hot you are.
It's hard for me to determine without seeing exactly what you expected. Like if it's because if what you expected was really, really different than what you got, then I don't see anything wrong with you leaving a review because it's not what you got. So I am going to trust that what you expected was very different than what you actually got, and you left a review, and people do that all the time. Yeah. I would go not care.
Oh my God. Okay, so not care. Okay, I will say I did make it better because they reached out to me and they said, hey, we would love to send you a new lid, even though it wouldn't be there for the proposal. Mm-hmm. And then I amended my review.
Okay. But when they sent the backup, was it nicer?
It was an improvement for sure.
So they're just not good at it.
You won't be ordering it.
I won't. Okay, I'll just give you one more since we're running low on time. But this is I got takeout over the weekend and I left two really bad reviews.
We don't even got
all right, we're building a case here. Go ahead.
So I got takeout over the weekend from this new app I was really excited to try. I don't want to get sued for slander, but it's an app that you can put in an order and they will give you like food that they're about to throw out, but they'll give it to you for like a discounted rate. So it's like $5 or $6, but you get like a bunch of food. So I ordered from a large supermarket to get a little sweet treat basket on Saturday because I was going through some stuff and I needed something to take the edge off. So I go while the store is closing and they're very nice. They give me my bag and I went home and it was a bunch of really delicious sweet treats. But about 10 minutes later, I noticed my tummy started rumbling in ways it shouldn't be rumbling. Mm. And I have got food poisoning from the bag immediately. And then I left another 1-star review publicly because I was like, this store is not going under. And the second day I was dumb, did the exact same thing, used the same app, got food from another restaurant they didn't have my food when I got there. And so I told them that I would be requesting a refund and I left.
I will be requesting a refund
because I didn't have why would I pay for food I never got?
What do you think?
That's Karen.
Karen-ish?
Yeah, for sure. That's Karen.
I never got my food.
You're building a strong case.
Yeah.
I don't think we're full Karen. I think she's now getting into adolescence.
Yeah, you're
getting
close.
Training?
All right.
I'm like baby Karen.
You're on your way, but I still think we need to hear the last example just to make it one way or the other concrete or not.
The AT&T store. I feel like I can convict myself with this one. So I've already talked about my experience with trying to get a new phone. I've been in and out of the store for hours and hours on end. My last bout with the AT&T store before I just decided to live with my busted butt phone was I was there. I showed up. I was supposed to get my phone. And they said, we've lost your phone. Like, we don't know where it is. So we have to report it as stolen. And I literally look at them and I go, are you kidding me? Because the employee was the one that like wrote down the address and everything. I was like, what the heck is going on? Okay. So I have to leave. I have to go get my ID. I come back. They scan my ID. And then he runs off and he helps another customer for like 30 minutes. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, I got things to do. I'm like, all you have to do is just order my next phone. Like, okay. So I'm sitting there. And then he comes back and he gets my information for something else. He goes, da, 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 da. And then he leaves and he helps another customer. It's like another 20 minutes that goes by. And then finally he comes back. He goes, okay, we're at the very end. All you have to do is pay for the taxes and fee on this new phone. I said, great. My card is hooked up to my AT&T bill. just bill me. And he goes, you need a physical credit card to do that. And I did not have it. And I look at him and I go, I have things to do. I'm leaving. And then I left. And then he had to chase me out of the store because I left my ID with him.
No, I think that there's a major difference between being a Karen and being bratty.
Yeah, that wasn't bratty.
A little bit.
Why didn't you go somewhere without your ID?
Well, because I live down the street from the AT&T store. So I was like, I don't need my ID. I'm just going to the AT&T store. I'm just supposed to pick up my phone. And then they didn't have my phone.
I think a Karen is outside with a protest.
Yeah, you ought to be louder.
Yeah, you're not there.
Yeah, call the police.
You're not there.
Okay. I'm too quiet to be Karen.
Yeah, try harder.
You got to be louder. You're still too demure. Yeah. You're too demure for Karen status.
I don't think the AT&T store service people feel that way. I'm scared to go back in because I feel bad. I feel like I need to send them a fruit basket.
You're a Karen in training right now, but you're not there.
But I don't want to be. Okay.
The Burt Show.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.